Welcome everyone to this OPAL online program about the 10 top technology trends that librarians should be monitoring and participating in, I might add, in 2006 and beyond. I'm Tom Peters, the coordinator of OPAL, and today is Thursday, April 6, 2006. OPAL is an international collaborative effort by libraries of all types to provide web-based programs and training for library users and library staff members. OPAL currently has 38 member organizations. If your library or not-for-profit library-related organization would like more information about OPAL organizational memberships, please contact me. My email address is tpeters@tapinformation.com. OPAL is administered by the Alliance Library System in Illinois, the Mid-Illinois Talking Book Center, and the Illinois State Library Talking Book and Braille Service. Let me just take a few minutes to cover a few virtual housekeeping things. Feel free to type questions and comments into the text chat area in the left center area of your screen. Our presenter will try to address as many of them as possible, time permitting. If you have several people participating in this online presentation at your particular location, please type the number into the text chat area so we can get a fairly good estimate of the size of today's online audience. So for example, if you have 7 people sitting around a table, just type in 7 into text chat so we can get a sense of the size of our audience. If you would like to hide the slide outline and increase the size of the slides themselves, click on the outline button below in the bottom center area of your screen, below the outline itself. Please note that this live online presentation is being recorded. The recording will be added to the OPAL archive later today. We also will podcast the audio portion of the recording too. One final thing, if you're coming into today's event from a non-US location, please type the name of the country or your location. We know we often draw from around the world and we'd like to know where you're coming from. So let me introduce our guest speaker today, Michael Stevens. He really needs no introduction. His MLS is from Indiana University. He spent the past 15 years in public libraries working as a reference librarian, a technology trainer, and manager of networked resources and training at the St. Joseph County Public Library in South Bend, Indiana. His most recent position in the public library setting was as special project librarian, focusing on technology, policy, and planning. Beginning in the fall of 2006, Michael will be joining the Graduate School of Library and Information Science at Dominican University in River Forest, Illinois, as an instructor teaching technology and libraries classes. He is finishing up his IMLS-funded interdisciplinary PhD at the University of North Texas. Active in ALA, Michael has presented at library conferences locally, nationally, and on the international level, as well as workshops for libraries and library associations. In 2001, he published the Library Internet Trainers Toolkit, a series of technology training modules in CD-ROM with Neil Schumann Incorporated and in the UK with the British Library Association in 2002. His library technology report, Best Practices for Social Software in Libraries, will be published by ALA later in this year. He, last but not least, he writes the wonderful blog, Tame the Web, at www.tametheweb.com. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Michael Stevens.
Hello, everybody. Hi. Okay, I need to do the thing that will keep my voice going all the time. How do I hold down the control thing, Tom?
Just click on that microphone icon in the lower left there.
Oh, got it. Now you can probably hear me. Okay. Wow. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you to Tom and to Lori Bell for having me. It's kind of weird to be here in my house with the dogs. I gave them each a scoop of food, so hopefully they're going to go to sleep for the hour. But to know that I'm looking at this number going up and up, 275 folks, and suddenly I'm a little nervous. Let's just dive into this and go through some of this material. I'm really happy to be talking to you all today. First up, before we go into our top 10 list, let's talk a little bit about the library landscape and what's going out there. There's a lot of discussion right now about change in libraries and how we might improve services. And some of those discussions center around online environments, and that's one of the things I want to talk about today. I've also, in reading web blogs and articles and being in workshops as well as teaching workshops, I've felt that there's a push to innovate right now for libraries and librarians to really find new and exciting services. And one of the ones that comes to mind outside of the realm of our discussion today is gaming programs. I really wrestled with these 10 technologies, and it was hard. I don't know if we could have made a longer list. I know we have an hour together, so there are many more. There are things I didn't even get to, but what I will present to you today is based on two blog posts I did, one in 2005 and one in 2006 in January, for 10 top technologies for, or techie things, I call them, for librarians to look for. So right now, there's a lot of things going on with technology and libraries and online presence, and we get a lot of word for the innovators, the people that are out in front, like Ann Arbor District Library doing the blog-based website. That the early adopters are providing us with a proving ground that these things work, such as instant messaging and, of course, web blogging and RSS. And finally, the majority, and this is based on Roger's adoption curve for innovation, the majority will adopt when it feels right. And I think right now we're on the precipice of a lot of of these things tipping, especially some of the early ones. A lot of what I'm going to talk about today centers around Web 2.0, and I would urge you all to visit Newsweek and read their cover story. You can get it online. And you can actually print it out there or grab the issue. And I just realized I did not buy the actual physical issue, and I wish I would have. And I hope it's still going to be on the newsstand for me. I've also linked to this on my blog as well. Web 2.0 is where we live, and that's what Newsweek says. It's where we live. It's where people are interacting. And right now, there's from different places, there's a push for libraries as well as librarians to be involved. And open source figures into this as well, which we'll talk about. I also want to mention conversations, because that's a theme that's going to run through the technologies we talk about. The social tools of Web 2.0 allow us to enter into conversations with our users really like never before. There are conversations going on out, and I really believe we need to participate. That said, I'd like to urge all of you that have not read the Clue Train Manifesto to do so. Jenny Levine and I spoke last week or 2 weeks ago to a wonderful group of folks at the Public Library Association talking about blogs and RSS, and we tied it all up by addressing the Clue Train and saying one of the things the Clue Train says is that network conversations are enabling powerful new forms of social organization. And there are conversations going on out on the web. And to be successful at these conversations, we need to speak with a human voice. The Clue Train is all about business and about companies. I like to take that word out of there, the word companies, and insert libraries. To speak with a human voice, libraries must share the concerns of their communities. And I think some of these technologies help us make those conversations possible. Before we dive in again, I want to talk a little bit about planning and users. I can't tell you how important this is to involve our users in any technology projects we do in libraries. Involve users, get them in early, and get them in often. Please focus on the return on investment for any technology initiatives, and anything you plan for, you must include thoughts and plans for promotion, policy, training, staffing, and technology. If you miss out on any of those five things, I hate to say it, but your initiative may be doomed to fail or to not come off as well as it could. Another thing we need to do is understand our library users and look at all the different folks and what they might think of libraries. And let me refer you, I'm going to say this now, and we may come back to it. I just put up a blog post at Tame the Web with extra links. So you can take a look at that, because there might be some things that I have not included in the presentation. So it's the top post right now at Tame the Web, and we'll address that here and there, including, here we go, next slide. A link to the OCLC Perceptions of Libraries and Information Resources document. Right now, wonderful resource. I urge everyone listening to grab a copy of this this publication from OCLC and read it and use it in your technology planning. One of the trends they pick up on is a trend toward increased information self-service and seamlessness, meaning that our users want things to flow very, very seamlessly from services into information finding and beyond for all types of library services. A little bit deeper, we find some percentages here. 51% of the folks that they surveyed have used instant messaging, and that is going to be one of our top 10 technologies. 30% have never heard of online databases. Wow. Also, take a look at any of the studies that Pew does, Pew Internet and American Life Project, because those documents offer evidence and statistics that will help you in your technology planning as well. I threw this slide in. It talks a little bit more about users and really about one of our upcoming user populations, and that's the millennials. I don't want to get totally hung up just on them, because we need to think about technologies that will reach all of our users, the users we have, the users we want to reach, all of the age groups, all the demographics, etc. But the young people, the millennials, born, I think, 78 to 92, they are team-oriented. They are immersed in media and their gadgets. They use the social web, and we'll talk about MySpace. And this is very interesting. They accept a loss of privacy for accessibility. And I was at dinner with some friends a couple nights ago, and their son was with them, and I said, he's 16, I said, so let me ask you, you're on MySpace, what do you think, do you let go of your privacy to be accessible? And he said, heck yeah, I want people to find me. All right, so let's dive into this. I know we need to watch the clock a bit, and I have a lot of slides. Number one, weblogs with comments enabled. I included this one, and here's the what are weblogs slide. I included this one because I think it's still important, and there may be libraries that haven't gotten into the weblog business yet, or they haven't decided if a weblog is right for them. Very quickly, what is a weblog? Simply put, it is a software tool. It is a content management system. It does things for you. It builds pages. It organizes your postings, your news, if you will, by date. It self-archives by date, by category, etc. And let's look at some. One of my favorites. This is the Waterloo Public Library Book Club blog. This is a comments turned on, and when I say comments turned on, I mean weblog software allows for users who are reading the blog posts to actually type in their own comments and publish them to the blog, thus creating conversation. So we'll see a few here with comments turned on. This is Waterloo Public Library Book Club. This takes the book club from the physical space of the library, where they might meet monthly, into the online realm. So the book club meets, and then maybe for the next month, they still discuss the book, or they bring newer information to the conversation by posting, etc. All right. Oh, another favorite. This is a school library example from my colleague and school cohort member, Margaret Lincoln, from Battle Creek, Michigan, Lakeview High School. She did a project where she had her high school students reading Elie Wiesel's Night. She aligned with a high school in New York State, and they created a blog that allowed the students to go back and forth. And what they could do here was comment. Margaret might put up a question. What was your favorite passage from the book? The students can go back and forth via commenting and talk about it. This is kind of an exciting thing to think about, that we can create conversations and have a back and forth, you know, an exchange of information online. Now, one thing that may be going in some folks' heads is this is kind of a scary thing to put up a library blog and open up comments. You know, what happens if we get people saying crazy stuff, or how do we edit it? We'll talk about Ann Arbor here in just a second. Let's see what our next one is. Ah, yes, here's Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor is my favorite example for a library that's turned on comments in their weblogs. The Ann Arbor site is made up of about 7 different blogs that feed into one top location. Their library director is blogging. I think that's absolutely wonderful. What I've heard they do at Ann Arbor, if someone would use an inappropriate word, they will just go in and they will X out the letters, like they'll leave the first letter and then X out the rest and say edited for publication. So they don't let any expletives go up. But really, it's a self-correcting community as well. To post to Ann Arbor, you have to have a user login, and that gets you in with your library card. The same for the Knight blog. I don't know about Waterloo. It is a scary thing to think about opening up comments to our library users, but I think we really need to trust them. I think we need to think about trusting them and just, you know, monitoring the comments so nothing inappropriate is said. Here's a post from the director where she welcomes the library users to the new blog, and you can see here Josie is her name, Josie Parker. She actually had 19 comments to that post, so people have been talking from the get-go. Now, the reason I included web blogs for this talk is I recently did a Circe Dynex webinar. Well, it was back in February, and we had 180 people in the room, and we did polls, and this is wonderful that you can get this information back so easily. One of the questions was, does your library have a blog? 67% of the folks there said, no, we don't. So I think it's something that might be useful to many libraries. I've written about it. I've written about it in Computers and Libraries magazine, etc. So it might be something to think about. So here are some takeaways for this first part. Blogs can be the voice of the library. I think administrators should be involved, as well as librarians. You could have a group of folks blogging. Enable comments if you are comfortable with it, and I urge you to be so. I really advocate for that. Enable comments and create conversation, and be ready that if you get people commenting, to come back and comment to their comment and start that conversation by participating. All right, next up, RSS. Here's some basics. I'm not a super techie, so I won't get in, but RSS is an XML backend to blog posts and other types of web content that you can do stuff with. It might be defined as rich site summary. It might be defined as really simple syndication. Dave Weiner, great definition, called it automatic web surfing. And that's instead of me going to my 10 favorite websites every morning when I get to my desk, all of those websites that have RSS all come to me in a central location in my aggregator, which we'll talk about in just a second. Webopedia says syndicated content for RSS includes news feeds, events, news stories, headlines, project updates, etc. These are all things that libraries could be feeding out as well from their blogs or from their websites. Here's a shot of CNN, and I just wanted to put this in here to say RSS is creeping in. It's here and there. It's going to be the big thing. And if you notice, there's a little orange XML button. And when we start seeing that more and more, that means more and more websites are offering the opportunity for folks to subscribe. Now, the other thing there is a My Yahoo button. Really and truly, My Yahoo is the same thing. You set up a My Yahoo page, and it pulls in that back end of content and builds a page. Other sites like NetVibes, and here I'll make a note to include that. I'll update that post and include a link to NetVibes as well, which is another site that allows you to build pages with RSS. So RSS is out there. For example, here's Bloglines. I can read a load of different blogs in Bloglines and only go to one place. And here's a screenshot of it. And with RSS, librarians can do a few things. They can keep know about many topics. And that's something I worked very hard to turn my library staff at SJCPL onto before I left. They can be in the know if you give them the tools. And RSS will help your users find stuff. If you give them ways to subscribe to new material lists or anything coming out of your catalog, if that's a possibility, and we need to urge our vendors to provide us that capability as well. And you can syndicate audio and video content, such as podcasting, which we'll talk about in just a second. Here is Hennepin County Public Library, and they have a wonderful website that is XML, has a whole back end of XML. For example, I can subscribe to the teen events page in my blog lines, and anytime a new teen event is added, I will get a notification in blog lines. So I don't have to seek that out at that website. I just have to monitor my blog lines or favorite aggregator. Kansas City Public Library, same thing. Here's a subject guide. And you could subscribe to this page, and anytime that it's changed, you get an update. Kenton County Public Library, this is incredibly powerful. These are feeds of newly acquired materials or new titles. If you are all about all the new DVDs, you could subscribe to a newly ordered DVD feed and you'd know how to place your holds. Now, I've also seen this RSS used in the academic setting to place new material, new books on certain parts of a library's website or just the university website. For example, all the new biology books might feed to the biology department page. So there are many different ways you can do this. In fact, you can use RSS to put it out, put your content out in other places, and that's what Jenny and I were talking about in Boston. For example, a public library might want to put information on the city government page. Or again, here's the biology example. The university department webpage might get those new materials fed right to the page where students and faculty might find them. Front page of a company website for a special library, again with new materials or announcements. So here's some takeaways for RSS. Please do this if you have not done it yet. It is time well spent to teach your library staff how to use, subscribe, and consume RSS feeds in blog lines, in BlogBridge, whatever aggregator you choose, it would be a very good thing to do. At the same time, incorporate RSS or how it all works into your public class, your bibliographic instruction classes, and show your users, that's patrons, students, clients, whatever, how they can use RSS as well. And please, if you are the training librarian or you're in charge or the technology librarian, one of the best things you can ever do is get your aggregator and fill it with some of the excellent library web blogs, library news sites, and then all the wonderful feeds that are available to us. All right, we're going to jump into wikis. Hope we're doing okay here. We're going to keep on going. Slowed up just a little bit, but I think we're okay. A wiki is software, it's a content management system as well, that allows groups of folks to edit collaboratively a website. WikiWiki in Hawaiian means quick. That's where the term comes from. It's absolutely incredible, and let's just take a look here at one, what you can do with wiki software. It kind of gets away from the HTML that we've learned, or some of us have learned. You learn a new set of codes, and you can build pages that way. For example, here is the Butler University Library WikiRef. What the Butler librarians have done is create in a wiki, and I believe they're using SeedWiki here, which is one of the websites that offer free wikis. They've built an annotated list of their reference resources, print and online. All the librarians can contribute to this list. If anything changes, you can update the listing. Whoops. And I thought I had another screenshot in there, but I don't. You can update the listing for that resource, and it's always there for people to find, students, faculty, and the librarians themselves. I jumped ahead here because I want you all to see St. Joseph County Public Library. It's the library I just left. Who they do some incredible things there. They launched, right before I left, our library subject guides built entirely inside of Wiki software. The URL is there for you to grab or click on. And this, I think this PowerPoint will be made available after the talk. Instead of doing a blog-based subject guide or looking at some of the older ways we used to do our hot list, they decided to use a wiki the entire reference staff and beyond edit these pages, and it's amazing the content they've been able to put into them. We do a lot of localization. We do the Harry Potter page, subjects that folks are interested in. Here, for example, is the Da Vinci, a close-up of the Da Vinci Code page. We use cover art, a lot of links into the catalog. We're trying to build ways to find information, and there's some online reader's advisory, which I think is a very important thing to be thinking about. Okay, here's some takeaways then for wikis. Just know that a wiki allows a group to edit a website or a group of web pages. Librarians can use wikis. There's a tiny little bit of a learning curve, but once you start doing it, I think you'll be fine, to build resources for themselves or for users. And you can actually involve users. This is nice. I can click right back here. Let me point out the article. There's the article for the main page. There's a tab up at the top that says discussion. Our library users can click on that tab and suggest sites, suggest subject guides they'd like to see, and talk to the librarians. The librarians only can edit the wiki, can actually edit the subject guides pages, but we still give a way to create a conversation. So here's this idea of no muss and no fuss, and that goes with web blogging as well. We don't have to be tied to Dreamweaver or Frontpage or hard-coding HTML. We use these tools and we can get our content up onto the web. Here's instant messaging. Here's some statistics for instant messaging. Pew reported that 53 million American adults use IM, and especially the technology folk and the young adults. So IM is out there. Here's a definition of IM for us, and some of you may have used it. It simply is real-time conversation via one of the instant messaging clients, such as AOL, Yahoo, or Microsoft Messenger, where we have a real-time conversation back and forth. We type in a box. We probably have a list of contacts that are currently online, and that is called a buddy list, and I think that's important. I recently wrote an article for Computers and Libraries. Rachel Singer Gordon and I go back and forth with Lee, writing a department called Tech Tips for Every Librarian. And I wanted to highlight some of those in this talk as well, because we're trying to offer very, very low-cost solutions to librarians through these pieces. I did a piece called Faster IM, and each of the letters means something for doing instant messaging reference. Flow means it does not mess with your workflow very much. You will not be bombarded with questions. It just kind of slides in depending on what kind of model you set up. You ask the same kind of questions in IM, a reference interview interaction, than you do across a desk. There is wonderful software out there for you, AOL, etc., or there are open source solutions such as Trillion, which hit all the big clients at one time. Training, I described the training in the article. It's a lot of fun to do an IM training class because it gets people actually talking to each other and seeing what the experience is going to be like. IM is one of the easiest things you can do, one of the easiest services you can put up, and I really believe you get a good return on investment. Here's some examples from SJCPL and beyond of libraries that are doing instant messaging reference. My library, Thomas Ford Memorial Library in Homer Township, and there are many, many more, are using web pages or cards to promote their service. Now, speaking of those many, many more, this is a screenshot from the LibSuccess Wiki of libraries using IM reference. Now, I said many, many more, but I guess I was kidding a little bit because I counted for a talk I gave at Computers and Libraries and found there were about 65 at that time. There are a whole lot of libraries out there in library land. 65 of them are actively offering IM reference. This could be something that you might want to try at your library. I would urge you to try a pilot for sure, just to see how it goes. You know, and that's one of the most important things we can do when we talk about technology planning and new initiatives is do a pilot first. But take a look at this list, and you can learn all about how the other libraries do it, academic, public, etc. There aren't really any school libraries doing it, and we can't tell if there are any specials because they haven't really added themselves. But here's some takeaways. Libraries are doing this, and you can get some really good insight into how it works if you take a look at the LibSuccess Wiki, and big thanks to Meredith Farkas for that, as well as if you are an instant messaging librarian, please, there's a page, and I'll put a link up to it on Tame the Web right after this. There's a page where you can list your IM screen name and get yourself out there, because there are librarians online, and we talk about things sometimes. It's a great way to exchange ideas. Overall, instant messaging in libraries is a great way to have presence with your users, to be out where they are, to establish conversations, to talk to them, and it does indeed build community. All right. Podcasting. You know, I lost track of the numbers. I think we're on number 5. Podcasting. And if we were all in a room together, I probably would have done this before, but I would say, how many of you out there are actively podcasting at your library, to see the show of hands? I'm sorry we can't do this in the cyber environment. Podcasting is syndicated audio content. I mentioned it earlier in the RSS bit. What makes a podcast, the casting part or broadcasting part, is it's an audio file attached to a blog post and fed out via RSS for folks to grab in their aggregator or pull down in their podcast player, if you will, and listen to it. Here's one of my favorite library podcasts. I know there are a lot out there, but this one has been around and it's still going strong after many, many months. And this is the Decatur Campus Library of Georgia Perimeter College and their Listen Up podcast or Listen Up blog, where they do an audio presentation of what's happening at the library monthly. I subscribe to this one. It's always interesting just to check in and see how they're doing and see how they use this medium. I would urge you to try this one out. So as we said, podcasts are syndicated via RSS, or you could use something like iTunes. If you have iTunes on your computer, iTunes really changed the world when they built in a podcast directory a year or so ago. The podcast directory in iTunes is full of podcasts of any topic you would probably be interested in, all sorts of things, sports, recreation, leisure, news, etc. And there is a definite, oh, this made me so happy to see this, there is a definite library presence in the podcast directory at iTunes. Kankakee Public Library is podcasting. There's Lansing, a lot of different libraries, and they do the little graphics and you can subscribe through iTunes and get their content. It's nice to see that presence in iTunes. So here's some takeaways for podcasting. Podcasting adds audio to your web presence, and it's a lot bigger, really, than I thought it was 2 years ago when we were sitting at computers in libraries and the word podcast started to creep into some of the speakers. I turned to someone and said, wow, this podcasting thing is going to be pretty hot. And I meant hot as I still mean hot today. Libraries can participate. And here's something to think about, too. If you're not ready to dive in podcast, because there's a little bit of time involved and you have to maybe get a grip on the technology, but think about offering a way for our library users to actually record podcasts in the library. I don't think it's out of the question for a public library, for sure, just to debut a podcast studio and offer it up for people to create their own podcasts. One of the things I see in the future of libraries is a place for people to come in and create, and we'll talk about that more in just a bit. Also, don't miss some of the library podcasts and librarian podcasts like Greg Schwartz at OpenStax. There's a typo in my PowerPoint. Sorry, everybody. For current awareness as well, to keep in the know, and these things you can take with you on your iPod, other device, or burn to CD for your car. Oh, and here's Kankakee Public. This I wanted you all to see this one too. This should have come before the other. Great example. Sue Monk Kidd, popular author, comes to the library. They ask her, can we do a podcast interview as well? And then that content goes on the website. That's wonderful. All right, let's talk a little bit about open source. Another one of our top technologies or trends, I guess, for this one that we should be watching is open source software. And this is a quick little definition, and I should have cited it already, came off of Webopedia. Refers to a program in which the source code is available to the general public for use or modification. There are groups of programmers out in the world that are creating software for folks to use that they really don't have to pay for. They can use it. If they make modification, they just pass it on. It's kind of like that pay it forward idea. Open source software, you'll find all kinds of different types. We'll look at just a little bit here, but I would urge you to maybe explore this topic a bit. There are a lot of wonderful resources. In fact, a new blog that's getting a lot of press this week is the Tech Essence blog. I blogged about it, and they have a section there, and I will make a note here to link to that too, on open source. So I would urge you all to maybe give that one a look as well. Rachel Gordon, in our Tech Tips column in Computers and Libraries, wrote in March 06 on open source, and she called it Frugal Finds for Libraries, because really what we're talking about here is free software that libraries can use. For example, there is a product or a program called OpenOffice that does everything that Microsoft Office does, maybe slightly different, but it generates the same type of documents. Inkscape is a graphics editor that has some functionality. It may not be Photoshop, but it may be very, very useful on your library computers. Now back to instant messaging. I mentioned Trillian. On the Macintosh side, there's a program called Fire that will reach out to multiple types of instant messaging clients and allow a library to only log into one program but log into multiple screen names. And you can find out more about that in my article or on any of the IM resources pages online. Finally, I want to say there is support available out there, and this can be kind of off-putting. If you look at an open source software page and you're not like a super techie or maybe a self-proclaimed geek, it might be kind of off-putting to have to, for example, download and unpack a tarball, which I don't really even get that sometimes. But if you can download it and get the software running, there are communities of support available for you online. Here's some takeaways. It can be a viable alternative. Take a look, especially for our purposes today, at packages such as WordPress for blogs and MediaWiki for wikis. Both of these are used by libraries actively to create web presence. Let's talk about devices. All right. The iPod's kind of hot right now, and there are actually places, libraries, where iPods are being used for different purposes. Duke Divinity School is circulating iPods inside the library that people can listen and actually learn about the electronic resources. That's a pretty cool thing. Now, one of the problems, though, is this issue of digital rights management. Apple, iTunes, companies like NetLibrary and OverDrive, be very aware that if your library is discussing getting in a contract for the service, for example, with NetLibrary or OverDrive, that those two products do not work on iPods. And that's something to tell your users right up front if you start a service like that, because the numbers are running, 75 to 80% of portable music players are in fact iPods. I just found in one of the feeds I get a page of iPod projects at the Georgia College and State University, and there's a link to it on Tame the Web of all the different things that they're doing with iPods, from circulating course content to providing podcasts, etc. Stanford has most of their undergraduate lectures available for download via, I believe the URL is stanford.itunes.edu. That's incredible. Now, I don't want to slight other options. Hello, there we go. There are a lot of different MP3 players available. These are the type, these other ones, these window media enabled, etc., that will work for your net library and your recorded books. There are libraries, too, just to talk about the iPod for one more second, that are circulating iPods, that are actually letting people take them home with audio content from iTunes on them. such as the South Huntington Public Library. Here's a little bit about audio players. iPods are hard drive or flash drive if you're buying a Nano, as well as some of the other types of players, the iRivers, etc. Flash sometimes is more durable. You don't have the moving parts that you might with a hard drive, so that's something to have an idea about. Let's jump right into SMS, though. I wanted to say a couple words about this because I think this might be even more important when we talk about devices. There are libraries that are starting short message service reference services. Short message service is using your cell phone to send a brief message, thus the short, to someone else's phone. And you've probably done this. It's called texting. For example, did you know that Google has a number, and it's a very easy number, it's Google on your phone pad, 46645. You could actually send an SMS to that, a text message, 46645, and say something like weather, Mishawaka, Indiana, and you will get back a weather forecast. That's absolutely incredible. And I've demonstrated this in workshops when we've talked about devices. It's kind of fun to see what it sends back. If you need a phone number for a restaurant while you're traveling, it's a great way to get it. Now, that said, take a look at this. Southeastern Louisiana University is offering a text-the-librarian service. So students, wherever they find themselves, and that's one of the things we're talking about, is getting to our users wherever they happen to be. They can text the library, and the librarian can answer back. And again, we have a short amount of characters. I think it's 160, but still, this is something that I guess we could say innovators are looking at to see if it's a viable type of reference service. Here's the takeaways. Are you ready? Let me ask you all, are you ready for library users to bring their devices into the library? Don't put up barriers. And there's a lot of talk in the bibliobloggosphere right now of people posting photos of really bad no cell phone signs in libraries. So you could take a look at that as well. Let people bring in their devices, because we're going to need to be able to plug in our iPods and our cell phones and our storage devices to pull down stuff we might be looking for, the PDFs of articles, research, etc. Digital rights management is huge. It should have been on the list. It would be on the long list of this for a technology trend. I urge you to learn all you can about DRM. There is an ALA piece out on DRM for librarians, and I will link to that one as well at Tame the Web. All right, I'm watching the time here too, so I want to make sure we get through this. Okay, Paul Bosch, just did a program at Online Northwest. He did a keynote that was blogged on the Leda blog, and he says some of the most important factors of Web 2.0 are openness, decentralization, and participation. I want to talk a little bit about social software, social spaces, where we find people interacting. We find people tagging images, media, bookmarks, etc., meaning they're assigning their own keywords. People commenting, people making connections. Have you seen this on a website? Find more people like you. Find more people that listen to Fleetwood Mac. Find more people that have listened to or read Under the Tuscan Sun. What's happening with social software is people are making connections. For example, here's the Rutland Free Library website. If you click on any of their images, you drop down into the Rutland Free Library's photo stream at flickr.com. That's kind of cool. And then you can see that photo has tags. It could have a comment. It does have a little description there. And you could browse the library's other photos. Here is a great example. This is one of my favorites. This is Rock the Shells Band Night 2005 at Gwinnett County Public Library down in Georgia. They had 350 teens in to listen to five bands, and this is huge to promote what the library is doing, to promote a very unique program, and to get it out there, to get it out into the social pool so people find it. And these photos have a lot of comments because people can find them at Flickr. Here's the libraries and librarians pool at Flickr. Just for all of us listening, I think it's really good to participate in these social sites as well, just to put a face out there, to put the profession out there and say, wow, look at what we're doing with the social tools. We're librarians and we're doing these things. Okay, here's MySpace, and these are three libraries that have MySpace accounts. There's three of many. Hennepin, very small text here on my screen, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but there's a university library and a Goshen Public Library in New York State. These are libraries that have a MySpace account. They put themselves out into this huge fray of social interaction at MySpace, where there are literally hundreds of people joining every day. There's a lot of talk about MySpace right now. Is it good? Is it bad? Do we have a presence? Do we not? I actually got to talk to some librarians last week down in Kentucky that have MySpace accounts, and their library workers or library users actually talk to them that way inside of MySpace. This is something to watch very closely. Here's some takeaways. Read the Newsweek article for sure that we started with, but folks are living online, and I think libraries and librarians need a presence there as well. And I'm kind of saying the same thing that Stephen Abrams said at the DEAD technology panel in Computers and Libraries a couple weeks ago. We need to be out where people are. I think some of these social trends are truly going to change some of our online services. Let's talk about content. User-created content, this may be very important. There's a wonderful book called The Future of Music that talks about this future where users will be able to choose exactly what they want streaming into their lives at all times. Are we ready to give them some streams, and are we ready to give them a place to create their own content? These tools are so easy now. A new Macintosh comes with everything you need to record a podcast and get it out there. And the Windows side, the folks using Windows machines, you have the same type of programs available that anybody can make content. David Warlick, at his absolutely wonderful blog, said, content is conversation. Content is organizing itself, and people are finding each other because of their content. So in this future to be aware of, or the trend to watch, is we'll have users defining their own channels of content, and we can offer content and give them those podcast stations, or whatever we call them, to let folks make their own. And this could go be video as well, video creation, digital editing, etc. While we talk about content, let's also talk about mashing up services. And that's one of the words I want you all to take away today, is mashing up. And that's using, here's a little techie thing, don't worry about it, that's using an API, application program interface, to create new content by pulling content off the back end of a website. For example, Google and Amazon allow that to be done. For example, here is a map of Chicago libraries. The back end of this is the API from Google, using the Google Maps API. These folks, and they're in Chicago, have put little push pins, cyber push pins, if you will, for all types of libraries, and you can actually limit it down to the type of library, etc. This is a classic example of mashing up content. This is Ed Vilmetti's Wall of Books. This is pulling the XML backend off of the Ann Arbor library catalog and putting out the hot books into a browsable web window displaying cover art. So I might come to this page and browse around for what's really hot at Ann Arbor right now. This is something fascinating to take a look at, and I'll have a link for that on Tame the Web. Okay. Content is conversation. Oh, this is our takeaway. Sorry, I dropped that too. Content is conversation, to quote Warlick again. And I really urge all of you to think about digital creation stations in your libraries. This could be a future service that will really make us useful and relevant to our users. Pew found in studying teens that there are a lot of teens out there blogging and creating content, but those teens are from middle class or higher households. So one thing a library can do is level that playing field, and anybody, no matter if you have a computer at home or not, can come to the library and create something. I did a post and linking to K. Matthew Dames about a Mac in every library. The Apple software and the new Macs make it so, pardon me, this is a tiny commercial for Apple, they make it so easy to do these things, to podcast, to create blogs, to feed out images, etc., that sometimes I think I wish there was a Macintosh in every single library. Yay, here's a bonus. This is number 11. Sorry, I'm drinking my water too. The future of the ILS. I want to point you all to the WordPress OPEC by Casey Bison. What this is Casey is a librarian and programmer in New Hampshire, and he started thinking on his blog, which is masonbeeson.com, and there will be a link to that at the web. He started thinking about the library catalog as a blog, and he developed through WordPress a way to overlay his library's innovative interfaces catalog and actually assign every item its own blog post, meaning it has a static URL. This absolutely blows me away. What it does is it combines blogs, RSS, and the ILS. It pulls in Amazon reviews from the Amazon API. I love how this is all kind of tying itself together. It allows comments, and users can tag items, like you could tag the Harry Potter book Wizard, because it's about a young wizard, and it creates that static URL. There's the URL for the test ground for this. It's a proving ground. And I talked to Casey this morning, and he said the newest items displaying on this website are the newest items added to the catalog. It's fascinating to take a look at. Now, I wanted to say a couple other things about the future of the ILS. There is a link on the Tame the Web post about this to Roy Tennant and Andrew Pace, to a wonderful blog post of their presentation on Friday at Computers and Libraries. Sadly, I had to leave Computers and Libraries to get to Boston, and I missed it, but this was, I heard, a jam-packed room, and these two wonderful librarians are talking about the future of the ILS, and I would urge you to go find that link at Tame the Web, or just find it however you find things, and give it a read, because it's absolutely fascinating to hear what those two gentlemen have to say. Wow, we're on the downside here, folks, and I appreciate you're probably overwhelmed with my talking at you about all of these things, but I wanted to leave you with yet another numbered list. Five things that you can do right now. Number one is read web blogs. Read the library blogs, read other blogs, technology blogs, dabble in the Web 2.0 blogs, but it will help you stay in the know, and it will give you a lot of insight into what libraries can do with web blogs. There's a URL there, blogwithoutalibrary.net, that will link you to Amanda Johnson's clearinghouse of libraries and web blogs for all different types of libraries. Number two, start your own What's New blog at your library. I really believe it will help you generate and get your content out there. It used to be that we would have to run all over the library to get a new bit of information on the library website, and finally it would probably end up on some web developer's desk, and if they have a pile of stuff to do, that content might not get there in a timely fashion. If you have a blog, you can immediately update your content. Number three, get out there and try these things out. Experience some of these technologies I talked about, especially the Web 2.0 social stuff. Sign up for one of these social spaces. Try MySpace. Try Last.fm if you like music, which is all for people that play music on their computers, and that you can find other people that listen to music like you. Participate. See what it's like, because I think it's going to color our future. Number four, train your staff to use BlogLines or BlogBridge or whatever, but get them out there and show them how to use RSS, because I think you will really improve their grip on what's happening out in the world, with library news, with library technology news, with news in general, and just whatever they want to monitor. At the Tame the Web site, where I put up this post for Opal folks, there is a link to a wonderful blog post on teaching blog lines, so you might take a look at that one as well. Finally, number 5, create an emerging technology committee at your library that could do exactly what we've been doing here today, talking about new technologies. Now, if you're from a very, very small library, it might be just you and another person. Or if you're in a group of small libraries, get together once a month and talk about these things. Get one librarian from each location and talk. If you're in a larger system, designate some folks, let them get together and actually talk about emerging technology and how it might impact library services. Please, for me, don't be afraid to dream about how you can make the best services possible using technology in libraries. And please think about innovation as well. How can we create new services that may help our users? And if you have a blog or you have any way to do it, tell us about your innovations. Tell other librarians what you're doing. Send me an email. Send any of the library bloggers that handle user email. Tell us what you're doing and tell us what worked. And don't be afraid to tell folks what didn't work, because that's how we learn. That's how we learn about implementing new technologies in libraries. So with that, I will take a breath here, and I see we have just like 3 minutes for a question or two, and I see there's cyber clapping, and I appreciate the applause and the clapping. Thank you, everyone. Are there questions? I don't know, Tom, can we handle questions?
Michael, this has been wonderful. Just to reiterate, I did record this. I'll get that up there, get the blog podcast out. I don't want to take any more time, so we can ask a few questions of Michael. But thanks very much, and I don't think your dogs woke up at all during the session. That's great. Michael Shoshay, couldn't hear you. Might want to type that into text chat. Say, before everybody leaves, if you want to type into text chat any ideas or feedback about this session or ideas for future OPRL sessions, please feel free to do that, and we will take that seriously. Michael, one question that I noticed come across was a question about, those old bugaboos of, stuff like socially inappropriate behavior and inappropriate copying of someone else's ideas or content. What are your thoughts in general about how this Web 2.0 and Library 2.0 are going to deal with those lingering, I would say, concerns about the digital era we're in here?
That is a good question. Many of these communities are self-correcting, or if someone gets caught, using someone else's content, they usually get called on the carpet, inside the blogosphere or inside the wiki. Now, when we talk about mashing up, and mashing up also is about pulling in different types of music and like creating a new song, that really totally gets into the gray area of copyright, etc. So those things I would want to be aware of, and I think we need more time to get into this, but there's a lot to be said about making sure you're not violating copyright, but you're giving everybody a free rein to create and to pull in content. Hopefully if it's for personal use, educational use, you're okay.
Someone asked where we're going to archive this. I just co-browsed this into the OPRL archive, and it'll be under the Library and Information Science section of the archive. Well, Michael, thanks very much for sharing this information ideas, and you've given us lots to think about and investigate.
You're very welcome. I know it was a mountain of stuff, and I encourage you all to think about it, to look back at the PowerPoint, and just thank you very much.
Michael, thank you. That was just excellent. Do you have a minute to talk to Tom and I after the room clears?
Absolutely. Lori, I'm so glad to hear your voice. Hi. I'll stay around. Yeah.